Just how much are we actually smarter than creation? That seems to be the question that's posed by the topic we're speaking about this morning. The topic of Tosefta Shabbos. Mother and Tosefta Rosh Hashanah and Daftet wrote that there is a pasuk seems to have the calendar a little bit off. David and Kippur is something we tend to try to be careful with as we do. And try to make sure we have the right date. And yet, the Torah, at least in one place, refers to Yom Kippur as far as the fasting is concerned, as far as the beginning of Nisan. So the Torah makes a reference to the Yom HaTshiv. That you should be fasting, you should be afflicting yourself on the ninth day of Tishrei. And Shabbos, right? He's very familiar with a tenth day of Tishrei and Kippur. Again, this is not something that we're going to be too casual about. It's a big deal when the Kippur is and when it isn't. So the notion that Torah is going to make reference to fasting on the ninth is not a surprising notion. So what exactly is going on? Why did Torah tell us to fast on the ninth? So the Gemara actually has two answers to this question. It discusses it in two places. And we're only interested today in one of the answers. We're shown and discuss why it is that there are two different answers to the same question. There are two different messages from this pasuk, but today we're only focusing on one. Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that this is to indicate the Kanshim Seifin Echol Al HaKodesh. And we see from here that we should add on from the weekday to the Kodesh, to Shabbos, to Yom Kippur. So even though in Kippur is on the 10th of Tishrei, right? Nonetheless, the fasting in the Kippur shouldn't wait till the 10th to start, but some of the 9th should also be a part of the experience. So it doesn't all the 9th, but just the end of the 9th, of bringing in the Kippur a little bit earlier, the ending part of the 9th, that's what the Torah seems to be telling us in this passage. So from that statement, the intentional secret is all on Kodesh. So the vast majority of Rishonim understood that there is an obligation in HaTorah, derived from this pasuk, to add on from the weekday to Shabbos and Yom Tov. Every Shabbos and Yom Tov, there is a mitzvah of Tosefta. The mitzvah not to wait until the last actual action starts, but to bring it in early. And that's our practice. It's more obvious during the summer months, when many people have the practice to dive in significantly earlier. 7 o'clock in the morning, or whatever it is, sometimes significantly earlier than Shabbos, normally starts, then it's more obvious. But all year round, not because of Shabbos coming in too late, all year round there is apparently a mitzvah, Min HaTorah, again, according to most Rishonim, to start Shabbos a little bit earlier. I say according to most Rishonim, because the most blatant exception seems to be the Rambam. Rambam in his code, Hilchos Jesus HaAzer, so he takes this pasuk in its minimalist sense. He understands the movement in the most limited possible way. Because the pasuk doesn't actually refer to Shabbos or any other Yom Tov other than Yom Kippur. The pasuk is referring to Yom Kippur itself. So Rambam understands it in that very limited way, that there is a mitzvah to start with Yom Kippur early. And he's more limited than that because he doesn't necessarily apply this to the whole concept of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur we could define as having two halves, the prohibition of Malachim, one from any other than Shabbos, and of course there's an element we tend to focus on more even, the element of the fasting. So it's only the fasting that's really referenced in this pasuk, in Nisan. So therefore, there's a Rambam, there's an obligation to start the fast of Yom Kippur. But the question of whether or not an obligation is starting in Yisra Malacha, Yom Tov and Yom Kippur early, or any other Shabbos and Yom Tov early, so that the Rambam doesn't seem to mention. So there seems to be a major discrepancy between the Rambam and almost all other Rishonim. A few other opinions that are also in that direction. The vast majority of Rishonim seem to assume that every Shabbos, every Yom Tov is an obligation to bring it early in Min HaTorah. And the Rambam saying that only the Kippur and only the fasting of Kippur is an obligation to bring it over. Now, is he acknowledging an obligation to do the Rabbanim, does he recognize that he needs to do the Rabbanim's concept of the Sabbath Shabbos? So that was a big debate in later Sfarim. Many Achronim seemed that yes, he did recognize the concept of using the Rabbanim. He just didn't understand it to be a biblical notion of the philosophy. The ways he himself and the Marshall Kaufman and then the Rome and the Chapel, many Achronim seemed like that. But many others, including those that gave him on the Rambam, like the Pesach Mishnah, point out that the Rambam felt there was any obligation at all of this after Shabbos, he would talk about it. He doesn't seem to talk about it at all in Mishnah Torah. So one could be justified in getting the conclusion that the Rambam doesn't acknowledge any type of this after Shabbos. Not in that Torah or the Rabbanim, and that it's only in Kippur that the concept even has any relevance. Okay, so with that introduction, understanding that there is that difference, and that there is the opinion of the majority of Rishonim that we have an obligation to present to the Torah all the time, we have to try to figure out what exactly is going to be. Shabbos is normally going to start at whatever, 6:32. And I bring in Shabbos at 5:45. And the question is how much of the Sefer Shabbos you really believe in, how much question is happening all the time today. So let's say I'm going to start Shabbos at 5:45, and I normally would have started at 6:32. What am I doing? What am I accomplishing? And tied in with that question is, why am I doing it? And here the question started off is, really, how much are we actually partners in God in the creation of the world? Are we going to be so ambitious, as to say, and we'll call this first school of thought the ambitious school of thought? Are we going to be so ambitious as to say that we really have the ability? I don't know if the time is Friday night into Shabbos, but it's Friday afternoon into Shabbos. That it's light outside, it's the afternoon, it's Friday according to everybody. And we can turn that into Shabbos. Is that really the ability given to the Jewish people that we can control reality to such an extent? That we know Shabbos is always going to be Saturday. Nothing we can ever do about that. So we can turn Friday afternoon into a part of Saturday. Is that really within our power? There are those who would say yes. Yeah, the main goal is to be ambitious. That's to be a very lofty view of the extent to which we have control over creation. And we could hear it more easily when we're talking about Yontif. We're all familiar with the idea that in Kiddush and Yontif, we say Mikadosh and Yisrael, not Manin, as opposed to on Shabbos, so we just say Mikadosh and Shabbos. And the notion being that at least historically, not nowadays, but at least historically, we had some control over what Yontif was, because when Bezdin was making the decision when to start the month, so Bezdin could influence to some limited degree when Yontif would be. But Shabbos, we never had any control. Shabbos was always going to be Saturday, and there was never anything that the Jews could do to make it a different day of the week. So this notion that we may have the ability to extend Shabbos to a time which is really no different than Tuesday morning, there's really no difference between a Friday afternoon and a Tuesday morning as far as being Shabbos. That's a tremendous statement. That's one possibility, and we have to figure out if that's a possibility that we think is actually worth working on. Second possibility, we'll call the more pragmatic side. Second possibility doesn't see it possible for us to make Shabbos in this kind of Shabbos. Pragmatic school will recognize that Shabbos is going to be whatever it is. And we don't have the ability to change that. So therefore, what is our role? If we're told to add on to Shabbos, what is it that we're doing? So according to the pragmatic school, what we're doing is we're basically pretending. We're pretending to Shabbos. So on the Shabbos, we're not going to do the offer. So we'll stop doing the offer a little bit earlier. We'll stay to Malacha a little bit before Shabbos. What is that accomplish? A big letdown. A minute ago, we were partners in creation. We were bestowing Kedusha Shabbos where it wasn't yet there. Now, in this little pragmatic school, it's a big letdown. We don't have that ability. All we're doing is we're little kids playing make-believe. So what's the significance of either possibility? Why would we say one way or the other? The first school of thought, to say the ambitious perspective. So the ambitious perspective seems to indicate that what we're talking about here the desire to participate in holiness. And then we want to show that we're not satisfied with the holiness that we have in the world, we're not satisfied with the Kedusha Shabbos that we have, but that we're so involved, we're so desirous of adding Kedusha to the world, that we're going to jump in and go for more Kedusha. We're going to pull Kedusha in. So that, right, there will be a possibility. We understand what the motivation is there. We understand what the symbolism is there. And we're showing that we want to, not just have Shabbos passing and fall upon us, we want to go out and raise the Kedusha, bring the Kedusha earlier. But if we say it, it's make-believe, we say it's pretend. So what exactly are we accomplishing? So what we might be accomplishing could perhaps be implied by a medrash in Parshas Bereishis. A medrash in Bereishis comments in the pasuk, and then answers to the question. The pasuk that we're familiar with, the pasuk tells us that God finished creating the world on the seventh day. And the question is always asked, and that's not true. Now, he rested on the seventh day. He wasn't creating the world on the seventh day. He created the world in 6 days and then rested. So why does the Torah tell us he created the world on the seventh day? So we're familiar probably with a number of answers to this question. This Medrash gives a different one, perhaps, a little more famous answer. The Medrash says that this is to make the point that we aren't able to perceive on the same level as the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So God, even though he was resting on Shabbos, he could work right up until the gazillion second before Shabbos. And then, as soon as Shabbos starts, we'll stop moving the lights. So we can't perceive that. You don't have the ability to tell what a gazillion second is. So, if you were to witness this, it would look to us like there was creation going on Shabbos. So, in human perception, creation was happening on Shabbos in theory. But, even though the Kadosh Baruch Hu saw, they're not actually working on Shabbos. And in reference to that, the Medrash says, so because we don't have this ability to be self-reflective, so we have to be mostly with all our luggage. And we can't say, I'll keep working right up again, right until the actual millisecond Shabbos starts. Because then we will definitely violate Shabbos. We have no way of perceiving when that exact moment is. Certainly not nowadays, it's kind of complicated by a lot of attention. So we certainly don't have that ability. So we have to start Shabbos a little bit more in advance in order to make sure there are not going to be mechallel Shabbos. So then this, perhaps, might be the perspective of the pragmatic story. That we're worried about Shul Shabbos, that we can't just allow ourselves to just wait until Shabbos starts and then start observing from the Rabbah. We have to start taking upon ourselves the restrictions of Shabbos earlier in order to make sure that Shabbos will actually be witnessed. So that might be two perspectives as to what's going on. Either we're actually making Shabbos early, and that's a way of bringing Kedusha into the world actively and not merely waiting for it to happen. Or, no, we're not really making Shabbos early, we're just pretending to Shabbos before Shabbos. And we're doing that in order to protect Shabbos. We're doing that in order to make sure that we're not going to be mechallel Shabbos. Now, the second view sounds on the surface a little bit more like a dual one. And that sounds a little bit more like something we do as a protective measure, as an extra offense, which we normally associate with Rambam. So if you're going to tell me that the Rambam's view is that Tosefta Shabbos is a Rambam, which is then itself a question of whether or not he acknowledges it at all, we seem to agree it's not in that cover, according to him. Maybe it's not there, or maybe it's Rambam. So if you believe Tosefta Shabbos is Rambam, so then the second view certainly makes more sense. Certainly hard to say that the first school in its development in the theory of the Rabbanim today is that a notion of Rabbanim that we can actually make Shabbos, that's the harder to believe. So the second school of thought is much more consistent with the possibility that it's the Rabbanim. But it's not impossible to say that that's still the Raisa as well. That even when we're talking about a Mitzvah Raisa, it might still be a protective measure. This is something that's raised by Joseph Engel during the great Talmudic late college period. Joseph Engel, an author of many fascinating stories, has an often quoted essay in which he discusses this question. Do you ever find mitzvot min haTorah that behave like mitzvot Rabbanim? Do you ever find a mitzvot min haTorah whose focus is really to protect a mitzvah, another mitzvah min haTorah? Normally, we associate that role with the Rabbanim, so they're concepts in the Torah. Maybe there are concepts that are already in the Torah, that they're there to protect other concepts and stuff. So we just spend going on that, think about this, and we think about it for a second. And he comes up with 17, 18, 19 examples and mitzvahs, which, at least from one opinion or another, exist as protective measures. So on his list, he quotes his medrash. He says that according to this medrash, we assume, like most Rishonim, that Tosefta the Shabbos is Lo-Lexa, and we assume that this is the reason. And then it's going to come out that Tosefta the Shabbos is a concept in HaTorah that we have another concept in HaTorah. Okay, so these are two possibilities. So what difference does it make? How does this affect our lives? How does this have any impact on us? So it has impact on us in a number of ways. So there are a number of disputes in the Rishonim, and there are disputes in the Lidus Arm as well, disputes in the Rishonim, which seem to revolve around this question. And we'll see in the time we have how many of these issues can be touched upon. So one of them, very interesting issue, raised by Tosfos in the Sefer, which would be on Tosfos. Tosfos raises the question, the Gemara there in the Sefer seems to imply that it's possible to get married on Yom Kippur. And that's a shocking possibility, because we assume, according to the Talmud, probably, Prince of Yishalmi also probably, that it's an Issur in HaTorah to get married on Yom Kippur. The Moshe, the Aim, the Arab, and Simcha, the Simcha is derived from Sukkot, one plus from Yavad, and one plus from Yishalmi. So it seems to be there's an Issur in HaTorah to want to get married on Yom Kippur. So what's going on? Why did the Gemara seem to suggest that as a possibility in the course of one of the discussions in the second Sukkot? So Tosfos asks that question. Tosfos gives us two possible answers. And the presumption is that these two answers argue with each other. The presumption is that these two answers are each giving their own answer because they don't agree with the other answer. So one answer Tosfos gives. Let's get real. What's so happy about a wedding? Think of the fact they're getting married? That's the meal. The joyous meal is really where the simcha is really associated with. So maybe they got married on Yom Tov, but they had the meal before Yom Tov. So as long as you don't have the sukkah festival, as long as you don't have the wedding meal on Yom Tov, maybe there's no problem of mixing simcha and simcha. That's one answer in Tosfos. And the other answer in Tosfos is, no, maybe that's not the solution. Maybe what they did was, they got married during the time of Tosefta. Maybe they brought Yom Kippur in an hour and a half early, whatever it is. And then after they did that, then they accepted Yom Kippur. Then they had the wedding and they celebrated that day. So it happened on Yom Kippur, meaning it happened on the extended part of Tosefta. So again, assuming the two answers are to each other, what this results in is a machlokus as to whether or not prohibition of getting married on Yom Kippur applies during the time of Tosefta. We know it's not appropriate to get married on the night of Christmas, but maybe in this hour before, calling it Sukkot, even though it's really Erev Sukkot, so maybe it's possible to get married then. So what does this issue involve around? Why would I say yes? Why would I say no? So it seems that many of us suggest that this is relevant to the previous question. What's going on? I've been asking that. When you desire an hour before Sukkot, so it's now Sukkot. So what have you accomplished? If you had really made it into Yom Kippur, so then you'd understand that all of the rules that apply to Yom Kippur should apply now as well. So the simcha that's present in Yom Kippur is now applicable to this time before Yom Kippur, and therefore the simcha that we can't dilute by having a wedding at the same time is relevant then as well. Alternatively, if you say it's not really Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur is the hour when it starts. And all I do in this hour is I abstain from malacha, because I'm pretending that it's Yom Kippur. So then the simcha that is characteristic of Yom Kippur doesn't exist yet. It hasn't really come into effect. And if that's the case, then there isn't anything present that's going to stop me from getting that. So perhaps this dispute in Tosfos is relevant to this question. Perhaps that's the explanation between these two possibilities. This question that we're trying to figure out, what's going on when you start Shabbos and Yom Kippur early, what exactly is it that you're doing? Are you actually making a Shabbos, or are you just kind of acting? Another issue that's relevant to this question this is a little more common in our lives. And this one is brought up in Tosfos in the beginning of the Tanakh. And it's also debated between the Taz and the Marashah. The Taz is a very prominent commentary in the Taz of Shulchan Aruch, and the Marashah is a contemporary of Shulchan Aruch. So as we'll see, the Taz and the Marashah have three disputes about this issue, and all come out of this issue by and they all match. So first of all, the question that also raised in Tosfos itself, and Tosfos over there writes, that even though I could bring in Pesach early, nonetheless, we all know that it's a little frustrating on a Seder night when you have to still wait until it's really dark and the whole discussion right ahead. Some people have time to get to right now. But apparently, many aspects of the Seder night are not given to being performed during the Pesach. Kiddush may be one of the possibilities, it's again a longer discussion. But here, Tosfos raises the issue of matzah. That matzah can't be done during the time of Tosfos. And as Rambam and others explain, that's not relevant to our question. That's not about the issue of whether it's Pesach or not. Because the next morning is for sure Pesach. And yet, that's also not a time when you can fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. The mitzvah of matzah requires night. So even if I say we're still daylight outside and it's still the afternoon, I'm going to call it Pesach. That's terrific. But it's still not Pesach night. In order for it to be Pesach night, it has to actually be night. So, at least for matzah, right, Tosfos, you're going to have to wait until it's actually dark. And then, later Tosfos can discuss the question of Kiddush, and then Tosfos and other aspects of the Seder night that may also require, but in any event, that's what the subject Tosfos has started from, that there are complications involved in having the Seder while it's still light outside. But, what about not the Seder? What about Friday night? You want to have your Friday night dinner while it's still light outside. And again, this is an issue that's much more relevant to our lives than something that we see all the time. Certainly during the summer months. So, what's the story there? So there you see two opinions in Tosfos. And this is something that was debated again between the Taz and the Marashah. According to one possibility, this is endorsed by the Marashah. It's not appropriate to have a Friday night dinner while it's still light outside. Because Friday night dinner, presumably you want to be on Shabbos. The mitzvahs I say, the positive mitzvahs of Shabbos, you don't want to be on Shabbos. So if you're just staying away from Malacha, because you want to make sure not to be Machal Shabbos, so that's a great thing to do, but why should we say that you are able to fulfill the positive commandments of Shabbos in Malacha? So therefore, if one takes this vision, if one takes this view that we're only kind of acting like a Shabbos, then it might follow that we're not able to fulfill the positive commandments of Shabbos in this life. However, the Talmud disagrees. And presumably the logic there is that since you are bringing in Shabbos early, so once you bring in Shabbos early, it's completely Shabbos. If it's completely Shabbos, so then you should be able to do all the mitzvahs of Shabbos, and that will include Kiddush. So this dispute is the rabbi is actually not Kiddush, so that will include Suda Shabbos. So that question of Suda Shabbos seems to also stem from this issue, is it really Shabbos or not? And again, there are two more discussions about this in the Taz and Marashah. Marashah has a suggestion, a reference to Shmini Aseres. Says the Marashah that when you bring in Shmini Aseres early, towards the end of the Sukkot, you're not bringing Shmini Aseres. So as the Marashah says, there too, you shouldn't have your Suda, you shouldn't be starting anything, any bread, earlier than when it becomes actually done. Why not? Because the Marashah says you get into a whole confusion. That if it's Sukkot still, so then you should be sitting in the Sukkot with a book. But if Shmini Aseres, so the Gemara says that the Chutzlar Shmini Aseres is supposed to sit in the Sukkot, but not make a bracha. So what are you going to do about the bracha? If you start your dinner during the twilight of time, and it's still
He's still sukkahs, but you bring the shrimp tzaddis early, so are you going to make a bracha on the sukkah or not? So you're going to have a confusion. So my Shah recommends you shouldn't have your soup until later. And the Tav says, again, what are you talking about? Why should that be a problem? Once you've brought the shrimp tzaddis, the shrimp tzaddis now, therefore we know you follow the rules of shrimp tzaddis. You don't have a problem. Maybe it's sukkahs with the shrimp tzaddis. You've brought the shrimp tzaddis. Simple. So that same issue turns up here again in this issue, seems to find the same thing coming up.
School of cutting, it's very people are made from surface.
Right, so that general is an issue, that's going to come up in a lot of contexts. And how apparently that's not a problem, why exactly not, is probably going to involve a little more of a discussion, but it comes up in a lot of situations, think about it, that Josephus is coming at the expense of something else. It seems to be that, that's not something that's going to turn out. Except in this next case, actually, this is a good segue to the next situation. The third case that is raised by the Taz.
Yeah. What you just said that is not an issue with the effect of zero.
That's what I'm trying to segue into. Okay, so that's where it does come up. So the there it comes up for a different reason. So there is a chumra, which really is a questionable chumra because it seems to be changed on a different aspect. So much as Father Shaw has accepted this woman, it sounds in the Taz and the Mona that one time you should not do Tosafis is Shavuos. Because in Shavuos we're concerned that if you have to have seven complete weeks to do most of Sphira before Shavuos, so then maybe if I start Shavuos early, that's going to cut into the teams of Shavuos. Now that's an interesting thing on a couple levels, I'll just quickly mention. It doesn't necessarily relate back to the Shmini Atzeres question or other questions because this stems from the language of Tzimis, the fact that we want this to be complete.
Actually, when the Tzim disagrees, he totally doesn't like the... He doesn't understand the Magen Avraham at all. He says the reason for doing it at night is because it says Be'etzer. I mean, he says it's from the Lashon of Pasuk. It has nothing to do with the Tzim
disagree at all. I want to talk about that. So there are a lot of objections to this issue. And I'm not going to address them all. First of all, the fact that it would seem that we have an instrumental program of Tosafis on Shavuos, just like we do in every other Yantif. We assume that most of the time in the midst of Tosafis on time. So, how Shavuos uses that is the question. Right, that's what I'm stuck with. It. Some suggest it relates to the fact that the Torah doesn't assign an actual date for Shavuos, and Shavuos only comes at it at the completion of Shavuos, therefore, we have to actually complete Shavuos before we get to Shavuos. It's a difficult point. But it's a point that presumes that you're actually changing the day. If one says, like the Mahashah, I don't know if Mahashah is explicit on this, but it would apparently follow the Mahashah with different kinds of elements, but if one assumes like the Mahashah, so why do we have to worry about that? If the whole notion of Tosafis is you're merely pretending like it's done, so how does that in any way cut down the tumors of Sphira? Sphira's completely fine. The last hour of Sphira, whatever it is, I'm not going to walk away. How does that in any way affect what's going on? It's only if one takes the view that Tosafis actually cuts down the day, brings in a new day that would be inside the Tosafis. So this third issue, this third task, seems to relate, she talks about all the completely attacks. There is, I should mention, a fourth task, which a little more difficult. Fourth Taz, I'm not sure how well it works with this position. So I would ask you, I'd ask you the following question. There is something that's debated in the Torah as well, which is a question like this, and the later post we talk about this. What should the halacha be? Let's say I'm a Kabbal Shabbos. And then I realized it was a bad idea. Why was it a bad idea? Because I'm still at work, I'm on my computer. An hour and a half away from home, I have to drive home, I haven't bought anything for Shabbos. It was really a bad idea to bring in Shabbos at this point. I probably should have at least waited before I got home. So, what do I do now?
Can you be sure?
Can I be sure? That's the question the postman want to know. So luckily there happens to be a Bezdin in my place to work. So I could go down one floor to Bezdin and ask them to undo my acceptance of Shabbos. But is that a possibility? Right, let's say it's Shabbos morning and I decide I want to write a letter to somebody so I can't go to a bank and have them decide it's not Shabbos anymore. So, if it's really Shabbos, I would have to assume that if I had to actually extend the Yerusha Shabbos, I'm basically stuck. and I have to try to find some power in the office cafeteria. But if it's not really shopping, I just decided to pretend to shop. So then I could hear that it's more to you than mega. And if it's a mega, then maybe I could have this, I can have a shayla about this, I can go to the elevator on the next floor, and I asked Alpha, and I kind of made a mistake, this is not the conducive atmosphere for people shopping, and I would like to have it undone. So this is a debate among hosts of whether or not there is such a concept of Sheva on Shabbos, on Tosafot Shabbos. And I would think it would seem to relate to this issue. Maybe we should try to get him to running out of time.
Just want to hear a couple of testing people.
Also, that's also a discussion. It's also a little complicated, but we're worried about the clock and for 7 minutes left. So that question, I would have thought the positive taking the view on this, that if I've actually accepted Shabbos, so then, I'm stuck. Happens to be the Tide of Doesn't Sound That Way. The Tide of Doesn't Rosh Hashanah discusses a case where you had a 3-day Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah was Thursday and Friday, and going into Shabbos. And the community had a very depressing Rosh Hashanah because they lost their shofar, the shofar was stolen. So the whole Rosh Hashanah, they didn't blow a shofar, and they were all miserable and depressed. And then Friday afternoon they said, you know, it's been a miserable Rosh Hashanah, let's get rid of it quick. Let's bring in Shabbos now. Let's start Shabbos and let's forget about Rosh Hashanah. So they were Mekabel Shabbos. And then
guess
2 months later, guess what? The Pony Express comes in, we found the shofar, you still have 2 minutes left for Rosh Hashanah, you can still blow a shofar. So the question was, can we say, oh, it was a mistake, we need Mekabel Shabbos, now let's keep Rosh Hashanah going and let's blow a shofar. So the Talmud actually says the second possibility. The Talmud says, yeah, it was a mistake, and it should be done, and you can't, you know, couple of Shabbos get rid of it. So a whole bunch of points like that. So how exactly does this reconcile with the view of the Talmud in other places is the question to be asked. So another interesting case, which is related to this, is discussed by the Nesiv and his Chubis. The Nesiv and his Chubis in the nation of Dover. Discussing a situation where you had a woman who lit candles to bring in Shabbos, bringing in Shabbos. And the relationship of lighting candles and bringing in Shabbos was a very complex one. But for now, let's assume that by lighting candles, she was bringing in Shabbos. And that was, let's say, an hour before then. And right after she brought in Shabbos, she received news of her son that she had lost a relative, and the funeral already was, and therefore the halacha is that Shabbos should start immediately. That is a very complex question, because we know the relationship of Avelis to Yahweh is a tricky one. That if one starts Shiva before Yahweh, even if the Shiva only lasts for an hour, Yahweh comes in and cancels the Shiva, it's over, there's no more Shiva. But if a funeral takes place during Yahweh, what's on Kol HaMoed, so then it's a completely opposite circumstance, then everything waits until after Yahweh. And then, after Yom Tov, however many days later that is, then there is an entire Shiva after, almost an entire Shiva would call us. Pretty much an entire Shiva after Yom Tov. So these are pretty much opposite circumstances, a very big difference between the two cases. So which situation does this woman find herself in? If we believe that she really brought in Yom Tov. So then, when she brings in Yom Tov, so then she's in the situation, the second case you described, she's going to have to wait until after Yom Tov, in order to start Shiva and then have a completion of those things. But if it's not really on, if she's just abstaining from the law, but there's a total existence of Simcha of Yom has not yet actually started, so then it's the Simcha, of course, that contradicts the Avelis. So then, even though she's abstaining from the law, to have Avelis during that time is not considered an issue. She could start Shiva, and then when Yom really starts, then that will cancel Shiva. So that seems to relate in that way to the question we've been discussing. It's interesting to note, though, that the Nesiv in his discussion doesn't use this particular point of analysis. He actually makes reference to the discussion we just had, the issue of whether or not we do come all Shabbos to all Shabbos to the measure, and whether it's something that can be undone through the process of Shiva or Haraka. Is that something that should be canceled and then decide to start observing Shabbos? So almost out of time, what I'm going to say about this, but just make sure that we can review what we spoke about. So just to cover this topic, we can quickly review. So we spoke about this question of Tosafot Shabbos and Torah and Rabbanan. Seems like there's more of a question of that test of navigation, that Torah to add on to Shabbos and Yom Kippur all the time. And the Rambam seems to disagree on that they acknowledge that Tosefta see different, and only Tosefta see different. And the question whether we cannot acknowledge that Tosefta is Rabbanim is something that was debated in Rambam. And it was discussed what exactly was going on when in the Kabbalah Shabbos early, we said it was the ambitious school, the pragmatic school. The ambitious school seems to believe you were actually extending Kedusha Shabbos to an area where it's not there before, you're actually making Kedusha Shabbos. And Tosh doesn't want to do that in order to express one's desire to partake in Kedusha even more and to actively embrace Kedusha where it isn't there yet. And the second possibility, called the pragmatic school, suggests that there is a legal way to provide Shabbos, not actually making Shabbos at a Friday afternoon Shabbos, as I remember, starts. It's only that you have the ability to pretend that Shabbos by Malacha, presumably that, as suggested by the Midrash, that's the purpose of not violating Shabbos, to make the point that you want to stay far away from being Mechal Shabbos, so you're not going to wait for the last second, which is impossible for us to say anyway. And we discussed in Dabur and Midrash that may affect Malacha possibly, so that there are two opinions and choices in Sukkot that are never not possible to get married during the time of the second census. And that's to relate to the question of, is there simcha during the time of the second census? Is it really yantif, or are we only pretending, and therefore the assays are not going to set in? And then there was another question of whether or not you have to do the job of the time. That was debating two dancers and posters and sophomore, and that was also not working through the time of the Moshe, which we saw was a consistent issue coming up between the time of the Moshe in at least three places. You know, it should be in question Shemi Atzeres, you didn't Shemi Atzeres early, so what does that do to your Sukkah? Do you worry about the fact that there's some kind of a mixture between Shemi Atzeres and Sukkot, like the Mashal was worried that it would be so Shabbat, that no, the Antif has started as Shemi Atzeres, and not going to worry that it's also Sukkot and some other. And the third issue of Shavuos, the Chumrah that the Tad and the Avram had, which seems to be a little bit difficult in mind, I thought that it's going to not over here, to not bring in Shavuos early, because that will interfere somehow with the Tzimus. And again, if we're looking at Marshall's position, so then it would seem like Tzimta shouldn't be affected at all by the fact that for an hour during the Tzimta, we're not going to be doing the Bachelor, it shouldn't seem to have any relevance. We'll discuss the fourth path, which seems to be a little harder to reconcile in three, and that related to the question of Sheila, who would view Kabbalah Shabbos as a nether that you can undo, or is it an actual creation of Shabbos in the basis of discovery, and that was something that opponent debated. And the path has a discussion of the situation of his parents accepting Shabbos on top of Rosh Hashanah, when they had it up to the shofar showed up, and the Talmud said, "It's totally on the stage, you can't do it." And how exactly that was reconciled with other things of Talmud is something you have to figure out a little bit. And then we discussed the position of the Tzid, the question about the woman who accepted Yachtif and don't heard about Adelis. The question is, how does she relate to Adelis? Does Yachtif come in later and cancel even though she really was referring to Malacha? Or did she bring Yachtif already in the full sense together with Sukkah? And then she has to wait until afterwards. And then she relates to the question that we discussed. And she said, okay, now it's more along the question of the She'ela issue and use that perspective to discuss. And then there's a lot more to say. At what point that leave you with? One question to figure out, we kind of screwed around the issue of Kiddush. Kiddush would also seem to be an opportunity for this. That's the question of whether or not you can make Kiddush in time for Shabbos. The problem is, the Gemara is explicit. It's explicit that you can make Kiddush while still at that time. And the question is, how does the Rambam deal with that? If the Rambam only acknowledges the Sephus as a bargain at best, and maybe not at all, so how does he acknowledge, how does he deal with the Gemara that you can make Kiddush at that? There are only discussions, but there's a little bit of learning from the Rambam, from the Peshomer, and you can take a look at that for him. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. If I can ask everyone just one more minute, due to the larger crowd, we're going to, and Ramon, who's speaking next, there's a large demand outside as well, we're going to be shifting two rooms down to the end. Before we do, we just want to, first of all, thank all of you for attending. We see a lot of new faces today, so for all of you who are attending for the first time, welcome to Kol Yom Rishon. Thank you for challenging us to figure out a room that will fit everyone, and if everyone can just make their way to room F.
I'm going to go to the hospital.